Washington and Idaho legislators go back to work this month. Idaho's legislators have already been sworn in. The gavel drops on their 2019 session on Monday. Washington's lawmakers reconvene in Olympia a week later. Next week, we'll talk with two Spokane legislators about how they prepare for a new session. Today, veteran Spokane Democratic Representative Marcus Riccielli gives us a civics lesson about the process of making laws in Olympia. When does your preparation then start for a new session?
Well, really for me, as we end and we are our previous session and go into what we call the interim, that's when you start beginning to meet with folks and work on bills. And some of the best policies and legislation are things that get worked for 6-7 months leading up to the next session.
Then how is the bill writing process work as you go through that?
It's not a secret that we don't actually write the bills. We talk about concepts, but the actual code revisers, attorneys that work in our code revising process, and our nonpartisan staff, our partisan staff, it's a team that really, you work on the concepts, you work on the end goal of the policy intervention, and you go back and forth with drafts. You get drafts, you send them out. You get people to reflect on those drafts, and that's really what moves the process along. So really getting initial drafts and then having people reflect on those and give their comments and thoughts so you can improve and perfect the bill leading up to there. Now, there's a lot of people that do drop bills and write in January, and that's the first time that anybody has seen them, and I think those are the types of bills that get a lot of amendments in committee, and that's okay too. That is the process as well. But if you can do a lot of your homework prior, it seems to be a little more smooth sailing, and the whole process is set up to not pass bills, to really have a high bar. So the more work you can do in preparation is always better.
So let me take an example with one of your bills. Mm-hmm. And one I reported on last year. This is the Marshall Islands bill that would give Medicaid, them access to more Medicaid and that sort of thing. More representatives of the Marshall Islands who now live in Spokane mm-hmm. and state of Washington. So how did that bill work?
Well, really, that was a stakeholder process, and was working with the community, actually working with the folks who would help navigate the process of signing people up, et cetera, going back and forth. That bill had existed previously, so those concerns were brought up in committee when it didn't make it through all the process, so you had the benefit of that. You have the benefit of looking back on the testimony, the public testimony, pro and con, and trying to look for ways that you can solve problems ahead of time. So that was part of it. And then really a lot of it is actually getting the advocacy and stakeholder groups to figure out how they can weigh in best and hit that tipping point of support that will carry it through.
So you mentioned that somebody else had introduced that bill initially. When do you decide, or how do you decide then to take over and become maybe the prime sponsor of that bill?
Yeah, that's a good one. And actually, just to clarify, I did not prime sponsor that bill. Representative Santos did, and so she carried it through. But it is a good question. I'll take a bill that I did pick up after a decade of use. It was banning the source of income discrimination in our rental housing markets. And that bill had probably had 4 or 5 prime sponsors previously. A lot of times you look at the committees you're on of jurisdiction, your particular work with stakeholder groups, and sometimes it just needs a fresh look of somebody coming in. And you certainly talk with the previous prime sponsor and say, hey, I'm looking at this, and you work that agreement out, because you can cause hard feelings if you kind of go steal a bill. But a lot of times those folks are like, oh, I worked this for 2 years. It needs a new direction, and they're more than willing to kind of say, jump in.
So what is the prime sponsor? What do they do?
You know, the prime sponsor is really somebody who's responsible for working to get support from other legislators, from outside groups, to actually be the one to make the call on various amendments. You know, there could be amendments brought in the committee process. You're the one who is the most familiar with the bill, hopefully. You're kind of the expert on the policy in the legislature, and you're leading the charge. Sometimes it's really just, I guess for lack of a better word, cheerleading through the process, because so many bills, they don't get a certain level of attention. They just fall by the wayside. You know, you're making commitments to prioritize that bill as one of the bills you prime. Now, some people prime, in my opinion, too many bills, and then it's very hard for them to prioritize, or they fall off the radar. And so for me, it's really been to take a hard look at what bills I want to sign and prime sponsor and have the capacity to work in a way that I can try and get them passed through. Also, sometimes, you know, bills, they're not, it's not always just about passing them. Sometimes in a year, they take multiple years and you're really trying to start a conversation, and that's okay too.
So you might go into a session knowing that a particular bill has no chance in the world of being passed, but you're just trying to sort of move it forward a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, I think about something like the federal basic health option, which is a way that we can make the exchange more affordable for folks. And that is something several years ago, I just wanted to have a conversation. We know that people above the 138% of the federal poverty level are struggling on the exchange, on the affordability. It wasn't ready to be passed at that time, but I wanted to move that conversation forward. And you see that quite a bit. And sometimes the whole ask is to get a hearing. It's on TVW. People can come and give their testimony, and that can actually be the starting process for the next year to build upon.
So let's take the bill that would that will have Spokane County's commission go from 3 members to 5 members. How did that one work?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting one, because for several years I sponsored it and it didn't seem to be getting traction. And actually last year I crafted the bill, and it was only to move to 3 county commissioners by district. And I talked with some of my Republican colleagues, and they said, hey, aren't you still interested in moving to 5 commissioners? I said, yes, but you know, we don't seem to be hitting that critical tipping point, and I think this is a good interim step. And they said, no, we think this is the right year to do it. We're with you. And we did that, and that really changed the bill. So we actually, if you look back, I introduced that bill, and then 2-3 weeks later, introduced the actual bill to move it to 5 county commissioners, which is what moved forward. But that was a stakeholder process of a couple years of the bill not moving forward, and great discussions and amendments and going through the process to try and improve and perfect to get to that point. So it was really a many building blocks up to that.
So you mentioned something we hear about, especially in Congress, where Democrats don't work with Republicans and vice versa, whereas you're just talking about a bill where you were approached by Republicans. So what about that bipartisanship process at the state level?
Yeah, I feel good that we're not the other Washington, but the caveat is yet. So in a lot of what we pass, it comes out 97-1, 95-3, or unanimous. That doesn't get a lot of coverage because it's not very media worthy, but
well, there's not a lot of conflict.
There's not a conflict, yeah, right? Yeah. But it's really important, and I think it's actually even more important now that Democrats control the House, Senate, and governorship. The pendulum can swing, and I think those relationships matter. And I think we should be working to craft the best public policy, and that's not necessarily a red policy or a blue policy. That's the best public policy, and to get there, we need an inclusive process. And I think that's just a good way of operating for me. I'm one of 3 Democrats in the legislature east of the Cascades. I know how to work with the other side of the aisle, and I think that's an important piece. And I think that's why you see success for us here locally with things like our transportation package. I, you know, prime sponsored the WSU Medical School bill and worked along with Senator Michael Baumgartner at the time. That wasn't something that, you know, we didn't see eye to eye on a number of things, but we took Olympia by storm when we partnered up, because it really showed the commitment of this community, and bipartisanship still works.
You're listening to Inland Journal, and we're talking about the process of making laws in the Washington legislature with Democratic State Representative Marcus Riccielli. So as you get to a legislative session, you've got bills that you want to get heard. Mm-hmm. How do you make sure they get heard? What's the process? How do you, you know, do you have to be persuasive to get the committee chairman to take up your bills?
Yeah, it's about relationships. It's about talking about your priorities. I think definitely there's trust that's been built with various chairs that you can tell them, you can look them in the eye and say, I've worked this bill. Here's the pros. Here's some of the negatives. And you just go and you talk about the importance and why you're bringing it forward and make your case. And, that's where I think the preparation is good. Those committee hearings fill up quickly. So if you haven't done the prep and you're working stuff a little bit late, you run out of time sometimes. This is a long session, so we have a little bit more time to get on that docket. But, you know, what is kind of surprising to a lot of people is that if you're not kind of in the pipeline in those first couple, 2-3 weeks, then you're going to make it pretty tough to get your bill heard, because there's a lot going on. We introduce a ton of bills each year, and we want them to go through the public process and get those hearings. And at some point, the clock just runs out.
Okay, then assume your big bill gets the hearing it needs. Then how do you convince the chairman that Now it deserves a vote so I can move it along in the process.
Well, one, you work with your colleagues within your caucus on both sides of the aisle to show you got the votes to move it out of committee. That's important.
Is that your job to find the votes for a particular bill?
When I'm a prime sponsor, if I'm trying to get a bill out of committee, then I'm going to work it at every stage, and I want to have the votes to get it out of committee because I want it to continue to move on the process. And I, you know, personally prefer bills that, you know, go out unanimous of a committee. So I'll talk to members of both sides of the aisle and talk about why we should move it out. Now, sometimes bills are just divisive and come down on party lines. Those ones, you got to make sure you got your whole Democratic colleagues on board if you're going to continue to move it through the process. But I certainly work the whole committee to make sure that we can get that, you know, those better votes. And certainly coming off, you know, a couple years ago when the legislature was divided, the Republicans controlled the Senate and the Democrats controlled the House, it was a very important to try and get bipartisan votes out of committee and off the floor.
Okay, so then your bill gets a vote in the committee, gets out in the committee. Who do you have to convince to get it to a vote on the House floor?
Yeah, well, first there's a step. If it's coming out of a policy committee and costs money, then it has to go to a fiscal committee. And so that becomes a little more challenging because our mantra in the House is to fund any bill we pass off the floor. So in essence, if we pass a bill that has a monetary attachment to it, we will fund it in our budget. And so the Appropriations Committee is kind of the funnel, and funnels a lot of the bills that cost dollars. But let's say that you've either sent your bill out of the Policy Committee and went straight out, didn't have a monetary piece, or went to Appropriations and you've made it out of those committees. Then it goes to the Rules Committee, which is a little mystical. Rules Committee is just a committee, which I sit on. You vote whether or not to make things eligible for the floor. The reality is it's another place for bills to go to die, basically, and it's just another step in the process. Again, there's a high bar for bills to be passed off the floor. Now, what is probably the next question is, you get your bill on the floor, that doesn't mean you actually are going to get a floor vote. And then you have to work to get that bill actually brought up on the floor calendar to be voted on.
So I guess then I was going to ask who makes them die in Rules Committee, but I guess you could also add who makes them die on the House floor.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways a bill cannot make it off the floor. One is time. We have these timelines that we set up, we agree to prior to session. We call them cutoff dates. If a bill isn't moving forward in the process, it's likely not to move forward. There's exceptions to anything, but that's outside of those kind of exceptions to the rule. For the most part, generally, if it doesn't get off the floor, it's not going to move forward in the process. You're working at those points to talk to leaders, policy committee leaders, the rest of your caucus, advocate for it to be brought up on a floor vote. You want to do it earlier than later because it's not great sweating bills in the last couple days or even couple hours because the likelihood becomes less and less as time goes on.
TVW watchers will notice as you get to those cutoff dates, it's interesting to see that you'll go through literally a slew of bills. Some of them are your bills that you know about. A lot of them are bills that you don't know anything. How do you vote? How do you decide to vote on those bills that you don't know anything about?
Right. Well, one, you get to know the bills that come through your committee, so that's really helpful. We have trusted leaders within our caucus, chairs of the committee that brief bills that maybe you didn't have come through your committee, and bill reports that we read, which are summaries of the testimony, which are summaries of what the bill actually does and enacts. You rely a lot on that. And then, quite frankly, I rely on stakeholders that I can call here in our community. If something's coming up, I have a good sense of which direction, but you know, you don't get elected and some sort of kappa knowledge is put on you. There's a lot of things that you don't have firsthand knowledge in. You trust people in the community and you trust your legislative leaders. You trust people who know the issue and are good on it, and you can talk to them.
So if I'm watching you on the House floor on TVW and you've gone through four or five or six or eight bills and all of a sudden the gavel bangs and says it's time for caucus, then you're going back to get a briefing on the next slew of bills, correct?
That's correct. Sometimes that could be what we would call the next run list. That could be 15 bills we're going through. And when we go through those, it's not necessarily if a particular bill pops up on that potential run list that we're going to hear on the floor right then and right there. A lot of times what we find out through that process is that people are still working on amendments because you can amend the bill on the floor, or it's you know, there's some concerns that haven't been addressed. And so a lot of times that bill will be set aside. You go down the list, you hear about the bill, you hear the pros, the cons, the committee vote, positions of where stakeholder groups are potentially, et cetera, and take all that knowledge in. But sometimes you don't actually move forward with that bill because there's concerns that are brought up, and that's good.
And how often do your caucus leaders twist your arm to vote for something on a particular bill that's important to them?
Well, we don't do a lot of arm twisting, and I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. I'm the whip of the House.
You are the arm twister.
We don't do that, but we do like to have a sense of where folks are. And when something – it's changing now. The House Democrat caucus is 57 members. It was 50. And so then basically if one or two people said, I'm not voting for this, and we didn't think we had any Republican votes and that bill wasn't going forward, or we had to have a real discussion about – okay, so why aren't you supporting this? Is a caucus priority? You know, there's tough votes out there. We didn't get elected to punt all the tough issues. We got elected to solve problems, solve real problems. And when we push up against complex legislation, we sometimes find out that a Democratic member isn't lockstep with all the other Democratic members all the time. Same way with the Republicans. And we have to have those conversations. Sometimes the votes line up all over the board. One I can tell you specifically, I've worked very closely with Representative Paul Harris, a Republican from Vancouver. He supports tobacco 21, moving the age. I do as well. We went to the floor vote with absolutely no idea where people were, and the board lit up all over. You had Democrats supporting it, Democrats against it, Republicans supporting it, Republicans against it. Sometimes we don't have a good sense, but mostly we have an idea of where the votes are before we take a vote to the floor, because if you're the majority party, you're taking stuff out there to pass. If you don't have the votes, why would you put it up?
Now, what about the open records bill where the legislature essentially said the legislature deserves an exemption from state open records laws? It passes, and legislators start saying, well, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Governor, please veto this. Mm-hmm. What happened with that bill?
That bill was a mistake in how the process was moving forward. It went way too fast. When you move fast, sometimes big mistakes are made, and passing that bill off the floor was a mistake. But the process worked, because then as people understood kind of the ramifications, the governor was able to veto.
Did that get a lot of public attention then?
Absolutely, absolutely, and rightfully so. And the process worked in that standpoint, though, because you had a bunch of members signed on a letter asking for a veto. The bill was vetoed, and then another process is moving forward that people could agree upon to try and really get to the root of the issue. I don't think any legislator has an issue if somebody knows what's on their calendar or what's in their emails, et cetera. I think that that's should be open to the public. I think, you know, there were some legitimate concerns brought up about, like, hey, if somebody's communicating to me some sensitive information, I'm on the healthcare committee. Happens a lot. People talk about diseases, talk about very personal stuff and problems they're having with the healthcare system. How that's exempted, et cetera, makes sense to me. Also, some of the staffing requirements, like a lot of people think we have staff like Congress. I have one dedicated staff. So, you know, unless we're going to fund the mechanisms to actually do the public records and fulfill them, the copying, the et cetera, we need to look at all those things. And they're being looked at now, and I'm hopeful that we'll come up with a solution that makes sense.
Marcus Riccielli will begin his fourth term as a Democratic state representative in Spokane's 3rd Legislative District on January 14th. Next week, we'll talk with two Republicans, new State Representative Jenny Graham and Representative Bob McCaslin, about how they're preparing for the 2019 session.